Hi, Sarah.
Hi, my friend.
Sarah has new...
You want to talk about my glasses?
I do want to talk about your glasses because they have yellow lenses. And I feel like, I was like...
Does it feel like you're talking about Elton John?
I was going to say, or like someone who's about to go swimming, like goggles.
Oh, yeah. Listen, here's the truth. And this is not... You know how we started the season? We were like, we're going to try really hard not to be old people on the podcast. That ship has sailed.
I'm so leaning in. Yeah.
Here's what I will say. As you all know, I've talked about my glasses, my reading, I have this new sort of fairly new need for reading glasses. And nobody told me that once you get reading glasses, like then you literally can't read anything without glasses on, which does make me feel very old. But the reality is that now I have leaned into just like the craziest,
coolest,
lenses, so fun, right? Because, or not frames. And the reason why is because I have a 10-year-old who is still willing to sometimes like run and get something for me. And no matter how many pairs of these reading glasses I have, I never have them where I need them. So I have basically trained my child to, when I say like, I need a pair of reading glasses, to just go and grab the nearest like wacky lens. Because now, like that's how she can tell like which glasses I'm looking for.
That's cute.
Anyway, I am right now in the deep, dark deadline of a book called These Summer Storms. And my eyes are tired. Like I'm sitting in front of the computer look, I know I'm not the only person in the world who does this, but like I'm sitting in front of the computer 12, 14, 16 hours a day. It is exhausting. And at the end of the day, my eyes are just like, ugh. And then like when I crawl into bed to read a book on my phone, right? Like then I'm just looking at more screens. So somebody suggested I get yellow lenses to combat, I guess, the blue light of the screens. And I generally think this kind of thing is nonsense.
Right. Like, does it really work or whatever?
It feels like a reason for me to spend to get more of my money. But I got to tell you, I started wearing. So these are the only ones I have. These green, they're like very green lenses and or frames and then these yellow lenses. And since I started using them, my eyes are not tired at the end of the day. And I'm like, these are miracles. This is modern medicine. Spectacles are miracles. Derek Craven would definitely steal these because I would be wearing them all the time.
Seems like a great idea.
Sarah should have had these.
I have a separate pair of reading glasses. I don't wear them all the time. I wear them when my eyes get tired at the computer, but they have like the blue light
filter, which I think this is just like the intense for like you could get the normal one or you can get the like.
And I never know if it's like really works, but it feels like it really works. And so therefore, I'm just like, well, there's something to
be said. It could be psychosomatic.
So, yeah, which is fine.
I also did another thing because it's starting to be really nice here or it's like hinting on end of spring, you know, like outside weather. And I like to work outside at my on my deck in the summer. And so I bought a pair of reading glasses that are also sunglasses.
Oh, that's fun.
So that nice. I can wear them while I use my laptop outside, which makes me really happy. Anyway, welcome everyone to Faded Mates. We are not an eyeglass promotional tool, but I did get all of mine at Zenni because they're fairly inexpensive. So if you have like a normal, you know, if you're looking for a place, you can
always want to do that. But I'm never quite sure about the business about like pupillary measuring. Distance. Yes. And so I'm always just like, well, I don't know how to
now,
do that.
Now, can I tell you something? But you're also a Costco member. Listen, now we really are like the old down ladies.
Yes,
I mean,
fine.
Like, please.
I go to Costco.
If you go to Costco, just the eyeglass counter, you don't have to make a reservation. A reservation.
Appointment.
You don't have to make a reservation. You just go to the eyeglass counter and you say, hey, could you measure my pupillary distance? They'll do it for you.
Look at that. All right. Okay. I like that. That's a good tip.
You got your prescription from your eye doctor.
Yes,
often
I do.
Eye doctors don't like to give you your pupillary distance because it's a racket and they can get, you know, the optician in the building can,
sure,
you know.
Sure, sure. I got it.
Listen, I love you if you're an eye doctor, but this is a real thing in New York. And so you get your prescription from your eye doctor and you get your
pupillary distance from Costco.
And then you go to Zenni and you order all your cute frames. And then you hope that your kids and partners
find
will
them.
Just like finally everywhere. Are trying to read a cookbook in the kitchen.
All right. Well, there you go. Welcome to Faded Mates, Eyeglass Edition.
Faded Mates Live is officially over. Last time we said it was over, but now it's like officially over. And it was really fun.
Oh, it was so fun. We had a photographer come in.
Oh, the pictures are so good.
I had to stop looking at them because it's a feeling I was having. But I did look at all the pictures of the crowd and everybody looked like they were just having the best time. And it's awesome.
I know. It's so exciting. I'm actually literally this morning. So the people who put the whole event together, Kristen and Molly, our publicists are really remarkable. And Molly emailed me this morning and was like, here are all the photos that we think are the best. So I'm going through them right now. And it's very exciting. And we will ultimately put some of them up on the website and, you know, make sure that people get a chance. Maybe I'll build a gallery on the website so people can like go through it and check it all out. But it was really fun. Nikki Payne just was...
Yeah. I mean, she came in a full sequined jumpsuit. And I was like, after this is done, are you getting on a red eye to Vegas to marry people?
I mean, or I would marry Nikki in that jumpsuit anytime. So,
it was great. It was really fun.
It was really fun. And we have lots of ideas about how we can like harness the energy of Faded Mates Live and bring it back to the weekly. And we will do that as we go. What else? What else is happening, Jen? We're finally doing a deep dive. It's a deep dive week.
Yeah. So, Sarah, why don't you talk about Preferential Treatment by Heather Ware? Because this is a pick from you. And let's hear about, like, why you thought this would be a great one for us to talk about.
Yes. So, I put Preferential Treatment on the Best of the Year list in 2022 because it was one of those... Listen, it's over the last few years, it has been very rare for me to read a book. And like, I've read a lot of books where I've been like, that's good. But it's been very rare for me to read a book where I was like, this is on the best of the year list immediately. Like, and just know that like, this is one of the best for me. And I think there were a lot of things about this book that just like hit at the right time for me. But the biggest way that this book came sort of into my life, because it's weird how sometimes like it happens that you're reading a book and you read it either like just before the whole of reading Twitter seems to discover a book.
Right.
And I had read it literally like a week before Twitter was like, oh, my God, you got to read this Heather Ware book. But somebody and I this morning was trying to remember who, and I apologize.
I am the one who told you about it. Do you remember this?
Was it you?
It was me. And
because
here's why.
You were like, this is an alpha submissive.
Yeah. No. And I read another book by her. I think we were recording an episode and I read a book by her that like, and then I was like, oh, look at this one. And then I was literally like, oh, this.
Because everybody knows I'm very like, I think alpha submissives are really fascinating. And I love that kink in romance. Jen is not that way.
Well, so, and it was good for me to read it because I actually have some thoughts now about. But anyway, as I was reading the description, I was like, oh, this sounds really good. And then I was like, oh, this isn't not for me, but it is for Sarah. And I'm pretty sure I was the one who was like, Sarah, I found the book you have been searching for.
And you're welcome. Did. You did, in fact, find the book I was searching for because I tore through it in like, you know, 2 hours. And I really loved it for a lot. Like I loved it for many of the reasons that I'm a very basic reader, right? Like we all have our moments, especially in romance, where like the thing you love is very basic, right? Like you love a secret baby and you know all the reasons why it's wrong. But you still
but
love
there
a
you
secret
are,
baby,
right?
Right. I love a billionaire. I do. Like I know billionaires are terrible and I don't want them to exist in the world and they shouldn't exist in the world. But like I love a billionaire hero who's like throwing money at a heroine who like doesn't have money. This is, you know, my own. I'm exploring these issues with my therapist. But the reality is like there are a lot of billionaires in romance and there are very few billionaires in romance but there are very few billionaires in romance where like the billionaire-ness of the hero is like a character trait that is both good and bad, or rather, like, that is nuanced in some way. I don't think, honestly, I've ever read a contemporary romance about a billionaire that where, like, the like money was on the table as like a major flaw. Like, you've definitely read romance where heroines have been like, well, I feel uncomfortable with you having so much money and like paying, you know, there's the what's her name from 50 Shades of It All, right? Where she's like, I don't think I like that you just bought the company I work for to fire my terrible boss. But like, she really does, because who wouldn't love that if they had a terrible boss? So while it sort of like had the characteristics that I like, I really love a like take no prisoners heroine. I like a heroine who's like, I mean, like, I knew you would, even though you don't love an alpha submissive, I knew you would love that heroine.
Sure.
Because she's like, yeah, you want to pay me? Fine. Like, yes.
So I actually.
I need money. And yes.
Yeah. And we don't have to talk about it now. Like, you can decide when we talk about it. But what I discovered about this book was, and you've heard me say, I don't really like BDSM. I don't like the club. And then I read this book and I was like, oh, I'm actually not interested in dominance and submission.
In submission. Yeah. In like the power of it.
And so I've been like, it's been this really interesting thing where, you know, I've been like, oh, no, femdom's fine. It's sexy. Like, I was like, oh, no, it's. I'm not interested in submission, like, personally.
For any of the characters.
For any of them. For women, for men, for anybody in any kind of relationship.
I validate that. You're allowed to not be interested in
Yeah, but I don't think I really knew that because I...
Until this.
Yeah, and then I was like, oh, I get it now. Like, I'm on a journey of my own discoveries.
And so, I guess, like, we will definitely get into, like, the submissiveness that happens here because I think it's so fascinating how she dominates him. But I have questions. We'll come back. Put a pin in that. I have questions for
sure.
You. So then on top of it, there was this layer of, like, alpha submissive, like, the dominant hero who, like, has all the power externally in the world and, like, and, you know, cedes that power in sex. And that is a thing that I am not just, like, that I find kinky, and also a thing that I'm fascinated by. Because I think in many ways for me, it is... Like it is a very overt distillation of what I like from romance in general, right? Like, I like a broken hero, and it feels like in 2024 in late stage capitalism, like the breaking of like a billionaire hero who has all this power on the outside, or like in historicals, like a hero who is a duke and has like an immense estate and like all this in like. Built-in sort of DNA power, right? Suddenly being broken, being not only broken in the here, or not broken. I mean, I don't like pain play, so but like being dominated, right? In this moment of real vulnerability, and loving it,
mm-hmm.
is
craving
like,
it.
Yeah, it's me. It's basically revenge fantasy for me in a lot of ways.
Yeah, interesting,
right? Yeah. So. I think there are a lot of things about this book that were it was built for me. Like, and then when you read it and you see all the ways that she like plays with money, plays with power, plays with technology, she's really, it's a very modern book. Like, it is a romance of a time.
Yeah, and, I agree.
If somebody came down to Earth, you know, time traveler, or if like aliens came 300 years from now and they were like, what was 2020 or, you know, whatever, no aliens in 300 years, somebody was like, what was 2024 like? This is the book I want to give them. Like, this is all the mess of society.
Yeah.
But make it romance.
Yeah.
In my opinion. I really like this book, as you can tell.
No, I mean, I like this book a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it was sexy.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is going to be like the biggest interesting part of our conversation.
This week's episode of Faded Maids is sponsored by Megan Quinn, author of Bridesmaid for Hire.
Maggie Mitchell is taking a long, well-deserved vacation from her event planning business. And so she heads to Bora Bora. She's going to enjoy the sand and the beaches and just take the time to enjoy herself. But she is always on the job and she is hearing about the wedding of the century that is happening. And she like can't help but be curious, especially when it turns out that her arch nemesis and brother's best friend, Brody McFadden, is there as a guest of the wedding. It's his boss's daughter that's getting married. So she is kind of like, look, this guy owes me. They had, she's willing to admit, a very kind of sexy makeout session at one point that ended very badly. And she's just like, you owe me for this. And so she basically is going to pose as Brody's girlfriend to get the job. In return, he can stay in her beautiful, peaceful bungalow on the beach. So tensions rise, irritation flare, bickering happens, but sparks are also flying. And once she learns the real reason why their kiss from all those years ago was cut short, all of a sudden, maybe everything that was going wrong is really going right.
Oh boy, if you love people falling in love on an island, romantic comedies, enemies to lovers, fake boyfriends, brothers, best friends, this one just might be for you. You can get it right now this week in print, ebook, audiobook, or with your monthly subscription to Kindle Unlimited. And if your podcast app supports it, you can click on the chapter title right now to buy the book. Thanks to Megan Quinn for sponsoring this week's episode.
Why don't you tell everybody about this book?
Okay, so Kate works as a like an underling. And what I also liked is she had like a real job. She's not just his assistant. In this company where he's like the CEO.
Yeah.
And
she's like in shipping and receiving.
Yeah. Like she literally just like moves shit around on like the chessboard of like, you know,
yeah, there's Google like spreadsheets trucks and ships and stuff.
Yeah. What happens is I actually don't remember. Like somehow, I mean, somehow
it's the first page. It's like, yeah. She talk about starting in the right place too. Like there's no like flab here. Like,
yeah.
So Kate is at work. And this company like is owned by a billionaire.
Right.
That's all you need to know. Like,
right.
So, like there's like a man at the top who's a billionaire. And
Mikhail. His name's Mikhail.
Yeah. And so he is Russian, but he like transplanted here when he was young and like pulled himself up by his bootstraps and became right. a billionaire.
Fine. Well, and it's also clear that he like is sometimes in this office, but there are like international offices. Yeah, and
he's
so
a rich dude who has lots of places.
Yeah, this isn't
he
someone.
He also travels. Like he has a job. Yes. They both yes. have jobs.
Yeah. And this is not something where like he's been eyeing her, she's been eyeing him. Like I do remember their meeting is he's like, I've never seen this woman before. She must work for me. But like, it's not like a thing where they've been like sniffing around each other. Right.
Right.
Oh, so, I remember now. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So she's like something has gone wrong and she's like trying to get a ship from one port to another or like try like there's like a ship offshore. I think it's ships. It's like offshore.
Right.
And she's like, can we get it? We can't like the port's closed where we are. Can we get it to the next port?
We're moving things around. Right.
And like she's on the phone and somebody's like the person she's on the phone with is like giving her like trouble and she can't like get it done. And she's got like papers on her desk that she's like working with. And suddenly like there's like a man next to her and he reaches down to like touch the papers on her desk. And she like grabs his wrist.
Yeah.
And is like, no, no. And she's like in it. She's like, I don't know who. And she's not paying attention to who it is.
Right. Because she's so in the zone of trying to figure out this work problem.
Yeah. And like then like all the people around her are like, And she looks up and it's the billionaire owner of the company. Listen, this is romance. This would never happen. But we're in it. I'm in it at this point. And then like he's basically like, meet me in my office in an hour.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, I'm going to get fucking fired.
Yeah, fuck. Now I'm going to get
fired. And she is in, like, pretty dire financial straits. Like, I think a lot of people are in their 20s. Like, you know, she's like, I have all this credit card debt. I you know, I'm barely making ends meet. I like, you know, being fired from this job is going to really fucking hurt because she's already in the situation we've all been in our 20s where you're living off credit cards and you just
got
can't
a lot
really,
of debt.
Yeah, you can't make it, happen, but you have to make it happen because what else are you going to do? Right.
Right. She has an identical twin sister who is an exotic dancer, but like kind of is like a wreck, has sort of has been in and out of rehab. She has a mother who like needs cash all the time. Like her family situation is dire. And she feels very burdened by the trappings of the world, like rent, family, making sure her her mom has somewhere to live, like taking, she's like very, she's estranged from her sister because she feels like every time her sister turns up, she just wants money. Like there's a money situation there. She doesn't have the money to give her. Like she is weighted down and now she's going to lose her job. So she turns up in like the penthouse. She goes to like the penthouse floor, like whatever, where his office is, like all chrome and glass. And she goes in and he's basically like, I have a proposition for you.
Yeah.
And we're now in. So here's where I think POV is really interesting. This book is written in dual third. And I think the dual really serves it well, because when you are in his head, you are like, oh, he is immediately just like, I've never felt this way.
Well, that's not quite true, Sarah. He
really
recognizes something in her.
Not felt this way, like, I love her, but like felt this way, like.
He has felt this way before, and he finds women.
Not for a person.
Yes, Sarah, for women who fulfill this need.
Yes.
And it is, he has it, it has him in a chokehold for however long it lasts, and then it's gone. And he has put her in the same bucket. Like, I have.
Yes.
Right?
That's, yes.
Later on, he figures out it's different, but his initial interaction with her is very much like, I felt this way before. I found the woman to fulfill that need. It's a little weird because she seems to be triggering it rather than...
It's the reverse. Yes, that's what I meant. It's an inversion of what's normal for him.
But I recognize this. And when that happens, I just basically hire this woman to fulfill the need until it's gone because it always goes away.
Yeah. And then when it's gone, like he can go years without feeling it again. Like it's just not like sexual, like sex is not of interest to him, right? Relationship is not of interest to him until he's like, oh, wait, I have an itch and I'd like it scratched, right? But she has activated the itch, essentially. In kind of a like, so Heather Guerre also writes Paranormals, and like there is a sort of like, she activates mm-hmm. the itch in the kind of way like a fated mate situation.
Yeah, right. Like, I got blooded. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So he's like, I'm going to, and I don't remember all the numbers, but basically he's like, I would like to pay you weekly to dominate me. And he's like, what do you think is a reasonable amount of money for that? And she's like, $5,000. And she kind of doesn't, she thinks about it for a little bit. She's like, is this weird? This could be weird. Like, I have a job. He's my boss. But also, like, I need cash money. And this does kind of feel like it wouldn't be that bad. Like, he's handsome. He seems to be a decent person. And then he's basically like, okay, I'm going away for, like, 4 days. But, like, think about what your limits are. Like, think about. And then, and she's like, okay. So he leaves. And for 4 days, like, she kind of is like, is this going to happen? And, like, money lands in her account. And I think it's like more. It's like 10. He deposits like
there's
double.
Like a, yeah, there's like a
signing
free
bonus.
Number. Yeah. A signing bonus.
So then like, and then it just like, then this book like kind of takes off. He turns up and she is like, she realizes she has never been a dom. Like she has never been in a dominant relationship, but she's like, oh, like, yeah, I get it. This is kinky. And she like, kind of knows enough about it that she's like, do you have you need a safe word? And he's like, I don't need a safe word. Like, I'll do whatever you tell me
right.
to do. And she's like, no, but you do. Like, she's like really thoughtful about like how she's going to keep him, you know, keep them both like safe. And then it starts to get really interesting because like at first it just feels like, well, like Neil Crawl, like he's like, I want to eat you out. She's like, okay, fine, but like, you don't get to come. Like,
there's a really funny line where he said, where she thinks he was eating me out like I was paying him.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. And then, so like, if this is, if you think this might be kinky for you, this might, this will probably be kinky for you. Like, it works for me on a lot of levels. But the fascination that I have with this book that goes beyond the basic, right? Like, this would mm-hmm. be on our one-handed read episode, or like, for me,
right,
without our annual, you know, one-handed read episode, for me, without question. But what elevates it to, like, for me, best of the year, or like a book that I want to do a deep dive on, is that then she starts to dominate him financially.
Now, and this is where I was, this is where I thought the book was great for sure, because it doesn't start out there. And in fact, I knew that because you told me that. And that actually happens way later in the book than I expected, because
she has a friend who has a.
Well, but what happens first, and I was far more interested in this, is we see her going shopping with her money.
Oh, yeah.
And she, and now, and Sarah almost also, and I had sort of forgotten until she was talking about the sister, had sort of underselling actually just how really terrible their childhood was. So basically, like, these two twin girls were on their own for quite a lot of their childhood. Like, their parents, they lived in a trailer up in, like, the Wisconsin woods. Their parents were, like, essentially functionally abandoned them. Mm-hmm. In some ways, there's a little bit of shortcutting here, in other ways. But, like, they had to, like, sort of teach themselves to make food. And, right, like, really, they were destitute. Like, these children grew up in poverty. And so there's this really interesting scene, and this is where I became really interested in it too, where she takes his money and sort of goes shopping for herself for the first time. And she buys herself things that she knows are, like, that are like shoes, right?
And like bags. A camel coat. She buys herself a coat. Winter coat that
is
worth a lot of money.
Yes, and like a multi-thousand dollar coat, and right? And she says, and she's like, there's this part where she's like looking at herself and she's thinking about the ways that, like, they, I mean, it's beautifully done, because it's like really interwoven with some of her memories of growing up, right? And she is like thinking about them almost like Christmas presents, right? And she thinks to herself, this is unhealthy, she thought as she stared at her new shoes with glowing contentment, but I don't care.
Yeah.
And then she sort of like starts thinking about Mikhail and just like then stops. Like, it's so clear at the beginning that this is purely transactional.
It's transactional.
Yeah. And I really admired that she was shown that way. Like, she was like, I made money doing this and I'm not going to pay down my debt. I'm going to treat myself first. And I really loved it. I really did. I thought it was really fascinating, because her doming him financially starts with her treating herself.
Well, so there are two things that I think are really interesting. One, yes, the idea that she does this alone first, right? Like, that it is she, you're right. She is solitary for the first, like, I don't know, third of the book, right? Like, he's around, like, he's sort of a specter, but he's not like, and they, like, you know, whatever, have their sex moments, but like, she is her own person for the first third of the book. Then he does take her shopping. And this is like, if you love that scene in Pretty Woman where, like, basically where, you know, Richard Gere takes Julie Roberts to Rodeo Drive and basically is like, here is the card, whatever she wants. Like, you know, what is the line from Pretty Woman where he's like, you're not sucking up enough? Like,
yeah, right. Exactly. Right? I want her to be very, very happy. Right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so there's that too, where he sort of like clocks that she is uncomfortable with this, but also like wants it. And so he's, and also like he gets off on making her
giving her feel pleasure. Right.
Right. Right. And like, one of the things that I think is fascinating about the structure of this book and all of the thematic elements of this book is that it doesn't shy. Listen, I write historical romance, and historical romance spends a lot of time like putting power, using money as a talisman for power, right? Because in the world, money is power, right? But we don't talk about that in romance very much. Like in romance, it's sort of like, yes, he's a millionaire, or yes, we have money. And like often we see like an impoverished heroine or an impoverished one character like doesn't have very much money and the other one takes care of them. But it's all very like smooth edges. Like there's no like push-pull financially in most romance novels. Like it's just not a power dynamic that we explore in any way. And in this book, it's like on every page, there's this like kind of question of how money changes us and how it builds us, how it separates us from other people, how it establishes power, how it establishes like control. All of this becomes like is interrogated in this book. Right down to, I want to just say like the title of this book, Preferential Treatment, which is an employment law term. Like what Heather Guerra is doing here is like really some like big kind of cultural questioning about, you know, what it means to be in a relationship or to like be negotiating money around, like with money at the center of our relationships, which like it is at the center of our relationships. Like there's that every couple, like the thing couples fight most about is money, like how you spend it, how you, you know, earn it, how you, whether you're savers or, you know, whether you're, you know, poolers or, you know, splitters, like the money is on the table on every page. She has a friend who runs a shelter for.
So I feel like we're not even there yet. Like,
oh, we're not? I feel like that's like in the first third of the book. She does it on the phone with him.
All right. I'm going
to
look.
You have another thing to talk about. Let's talk about that then.
This week's episode of Fated Mates is brought to you by Sophie Andrews, author of How to Ruin a Wedding.
This is so fun. Okay. Jen, there are three things you need to know about Tilly Mahoney, our heroine. First, she is a liar. Second, she is pretty sure she is in love with her best friend of a long time. And third, she's got a plan to ruin her best friend's wedding because for decades, he has been her other half, her support system, and she's been his other half. And now he's decided to marry someone else? Absolutely not. Unacceptable. So Tilly hatches a plan, and in order for this plan to ruin this poor man's wedding goes well, she's going to ask the bride's ex-boyfriend, Zach, to be her partner in crime. And this guy is the perfect partner in crime. He is bearded, he is brooding, and he is desperate to win back the love of his life, who just happens to be marrying the love of hers.
Oh, boy.
Listen, Tilly and Zach make plans for shenanigans, and I think this is all going to go very poorly for them, and I believe that this wedding is going to end up being just chaos. At least that's what I'm hoping for. This one is for anybody who loves a romantic comedy, obviously. If you thought My Best Friend's Wedding was the movie of the century, then this one's for you.
Yeah, it is available in print, ebook, or audio, and with your monthly subscription to Kindle Unlimited. And if your podcast app supports it, you can look down, click on the chapter title, and start reading right now. Thank you to Sophie Andrews for sponsoring this week's episode. So the shelter is first mentioned at the halfway mark. And the idea that she's like, you should give money to that shelter doesn't happen until, like the 55% mark. But the thing I want to talk about is when he has food delivered before we get to there. Because he takes her shopping, right? And she is at that point sort of like, I can make some like monetary demands or like demand things of him that he could, like his money could make possible. But she asked him to essentially have a meal delivered to her from like the best restaurant in Manhattan, a restaurant that certainly does not do takeout, right? And She does it essentially because she's like, this way I can punish him. Like, to her, it's just a game. Like, if I ask him for something he cannot give me, then it will make, like, the next time I see him really sexy because I can punish him, right? And he enjoys that. And instead, there's this knock on the door. It's not like someone from the restaurant. Like, it's like a courier or whatever, yeah, right?
Yeah, car service.
Yeah, exactly. And what happens is, it's this meal from this restaurant, right? And so she signs for it. And again, like, she's been really alone, right? And so she sits down in her kitchen with this meal. And it has, like, real silverware. And the food, of course, you must have loved this, is, like, perfect and delicious. And again, we get it intercut with her remembering the meals that she and her sister had to eat, right? And she really says, and this is, like, I thought it was, again, like, really interesting, right? Like, although she had dominated men before, and I think, like, that's something I want to talk about later, they sort of expected her to, like, be in control of their pleasure and hers. But this is the first time she really had someone caring for her as part of this relationship, right? And she just, like, really savors this meal, and it helps her really understand something about, like, it. I think it changes her, right? And I know that you probably clocked this. I'm not one to, like, really, but, like, this, it's a really beautiful scene, and it's one I think that's really important for showing, like, the transition then to what comes next, which is her realizing, as you've said, like, over and over again, that, like, I can also dominate him, like, financially. Right?
Yeah.
So, no, I'm just saying, I felt like that was, like, a missing piece before we get to the next part. It's like, you have to talk about this scene where she's eating and literally, like, this is the first time I've had someone care for me, certainly in a relationship, but maybe ever.
Absolutely. And but here's the thing that I think is fascinating. The way that she, so yes, the domination, like, she sort of, She's anti-billionaire, this heroine, right? So, like, she does not blink. She's like, we are not going to feel bad. I'm not going to feel bad about taking this man's money, right? Like, you'll never be destitute. But I think what's really fascinating is, like, she has her own, like, discomfort with money, which, you know, you have just clocked, or you've talked about. And so she feels uncomfortable, like, taking more money than she is due, right? Like, they have negotiated salary, and, like, that is, you know, an exorbitant amount of money compared to what she was making, right? And he's taken her shopping, and he's, you know, bought her food, and, like, he clearly, like, is willing to do whatever he wants for her, but she feels uncomfortable, like, taking it. Like, she doesn't want the money for herself, or rather, maybe she wants the money for herself, but she doesn't feel comfortable with it. Like, there is a discomfort that is in here.
The way I would describe it is, like, not discomfort as much as, like, what are the boundaries?
She's, like, searching for the boundaries.
Yes. Right. Like, it's clear to her that, like, some things are okay for me to do and some things aren't. Like, and basically what she was like the part with the homeless shelter or whatever is, she was like, I was going to buy myself a Maserati on this black credit card you gave me.
Oh, yeah. Because
right. And but she, like, somehow that was too much. And I think it actually also had to do with her being like, I don't really want that. I would be spending his money to spend it, but I personally do not actually want a Maserati or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. But that Maserati scene isn't about her, right? That Maserati scene is about him. And what's interesting about it is, so, okay. So the tee up here is, she has this friend who runs a shelter for women and victims of domestic violence. So she is, they need $60,000 a year. The other thing that I think is fascinating about this book is numbers are clear, right? Like, there is no, like, romance often doesn't, you know, like, he pushed the thing across the table and the number on it, like, made me gasp. Like, there are real cash money is in play here in this book.
And it's funny because I will just say, as an editor, sometimes I'm like, don't say the number.
But here, right? You have to.
Here,
right?
Like, it's different, right?
Yeah. It's important. So, whatever. The shelter needs, its overhead is $60,000 a year, right? Like,
to pay the rent.
Rent. And so she says to her friend, like, well, let me see what I can do. Like, I'll get back to you on the donation. She calls him. She doms him over the phone. He's like in another country. She doms him over the phone. She says, I want you to donate to this. I want you to donate the full amount that they need for the year now. And he's like, $60,000. That's a lot of money. And she's like, you literally have billions. Like, it's not a lot of money.
Well, I think she says, I was going to buy myself a Maserati for 100.
That comes next. But yeah, you're worth over $50 billion.
Yeah, right.
And he says, oh, but it's not cash in hand. So you're literally like, oh, no, this guy is just a fucking billionaire. Like, he's like, she told him what she wants. Like, she told him where the money's going. And he's like, well, I don't know. I don't have a. And she's like, what happened? She says, what happened to the rich man who couldn't be bankrupted by little old me? I was going to buy a Maserati. And he said, I would rather you bought the Maserati. Right? Like, he can't fathom his money being used for a transaction
that doesn't benefit her.
That doesn't benefit someone in his, like, orbit, right? And also, I think there is this very real sense with him that, like, it's not if it's not concrete, it doesn't matter, right? Like, there's something very problematic about the way he thinks in this, like, in the early part of this book about money. And, like, there is, because he has to transform, right?
Well, but it's interesting because her read on that, which I found pretty satisfying, and it sounds like you are reading it a little differently, is she said realization dawned on her, right? He didn't care about the money. He cared that he wasn't giving it to Kate.
Yeah, I think that, well, I think there are two. Yes, I think that's true. But I also think there's something like, because later when it comes down to the grand gesture, like, he needs to learn to give his money away, not just to Kate, right? Like,
right.
I think it's twofold. But she gets it because she has to manipulate him into doing what she, like, she's like, oh, I see it now, right? So then she's like, well, fuck you. You're going to get punished.
Yeah.
Right? Like, right. So sorry, but when you come home, it's on. And he's like, and she's like, you're ignoring my commands. And he says, what? And she says, she wants 60,000. And he's like, tell me where, right? Then there's like this sexy phone thing that happens, which is great. And then next chapter, her friend calls and is like, holy shit, you will not believe what just happened. We got the biggest donation we've ever gotten for $500,000. And she's like, oh, it's on.
Like, now, did that happen right away? Or
yeah.
Okay.
She tells him he's in trouble. He says, hang on, where does it go? And then they have sex. And then at the beginning of the next chapter, there's $500,000 in the account for the shelter. And then she's like, oh, I get it now. And then he comes back and they have that billionaire conversation where she's like, you shouldn't exist.
Right.
And it's right. So great, because like he says, like, but you're saying I, human Mikhail, who, you know, has eaten you out like a pro, should not exist. And she's like, correct. Like, and it is fantastic.
He thinks about how hard he worked, essentially, to make
he talks money, about it,
right?
He tells her.
Yeah. And at that point, he does not know about her upbringing. And his like base assumption is that, like, well, I had it worse off than you as a kid. And if I could make it, you have no right to tell me that I don't deserve this. Right. And I do think that that was also really interesting. Right. And I think there's lots of ways that people make assumptions about class. I think he just was like, well, if I grew up in poverty in Russia and I made it out of here, who are you to tell me that I don't either deserve this or earn it or whatever? Yeah.
They have a real conversation in this book, like a real conversation that feels weighty in a way. And I mean, I think everybody listening knows that, like, I think romance is the fucking balls, right? I love it.
Right.
Right. But I cannot deny that, like, there are definitely real life
conversations that romance is not
interested in having. And this is one of those conversations where he says, this is what you were just talking about, right? Like, she basically says, like, you know, here's what you should be doing, to the point where she's like, you should be putting your money behind legislation to, like, stop Citizens United. I mean, she doesn't say Citizens United, but, like, this is a political diatribe that, like, Kate is on, right? And then he says, it sounds like you're an American lecturing a Russian on communism. And she's like, oh, please. And she kind of scoffs at him. And then she says, my childhood was awful. Right? Like, if only people who had too much, like billionaires, spread the wealth a little bit, like, we could make kids in poverty not have awful childhood. And he says, don't lecture me about poverty. I had even less than you. Like, this is a conversation you would have with a real person in your life, like, who you were in a relationship with. I just have never read, you know, romance that really, like, interrogates the world like this. This particular aspect of the world.
This aspect of it, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, yeah. Romance does that. I try to do it a lot in my books. But, like,
right. This in is this way,
a,
yeah.
Yeah, this is a really interesting political act. This week's episode of Faded Mates is sponsored by Sophie Jordan, author of The Duchess, the second in the Scandalous Ladies of London series.
Valencia is the Dowager Duchess of Dedham, and she's a dowager because her kind of terrible, wretched cat of a husband dropped dead a year ago, and honestly, her life is pretty great now. She has the freedom to do whatever she wants until the new Duke surfaces, as they do.
I love it.
And he is a big, brawny Welshman named Rain. He has an accent that makes her knees go weak. And he is, unfortunately, carting along with him, not one, not two, not three, but six, Sarah. Six sisters.
This is a man with a problem, or yeah. Six of them.
If SportsCenter existed, this man has never seen it. So, anyway, he... is basically like, you're spoiled, and she's like, you're ruining my fun. But they do come up with a bargain, and that bargain is that he will shower her with the money she needs to live the life she wants if he will get his sisters married off. And, of course, into good society. Can't just be to anybody. And
listen, this is a good trade to get rid of those girls.
I think so, too. So, but as they spend more time together, he starts to seem more dangerously seductive than anything else. And she vowed to never marry again. What is a merry widow to do? If you like widow duchesses gone wild, enemies to lovers, secrets and intrigue, and a girl gang, Real Housewives Regency vibes, then The Duchess is for you.
You can find Sophie's The Duchess, which is the second in her Scandalous Ladies of London series, right now, wherever books are sold. And if your podcast app supports it, you can click on the chapter title right now to buy the book. Thanks to Sophie Jordan for sponsoring this week's episode.
She doesn't start off saying, like, I'm going to make this motherfucker give up his billions. Like, that's not where it starts for her.
Mm-mm.
It starts out with her being like, and I think, like, that to me is like the journey, right? Like, you start off with, like, it benefits me. And then you're like, it can benefit my friends, or there's ways I can benefit, like, a smaller community. Mm-hmm. And then she starts, like, thinking bigger. And you know what? In one of the things I actually like about this is we have seen, especially in historical romance, many an older woman telling a younger woman, right? Like, think about Reese Witherspoon, right? When Helen or you know, when it was like, if you'd only had the nerve, which book was this? If you'd only had the nerve, you could have helped so many more.
Yeah.
Right? With this money. And you see this woman, right, kind of being like, oh, shit, you're right. Like, that is an incentive. But this is the only book I've ever seen where they show it.
Yes.
They show it happening.
Yes.
Right? If you only had the nerve, you could have helped so many more. And so we see her doing it.
At the end of this chapter, right? I mean, this chapter is, I really think, I feel like people should study this chapter when they think about romance, right? She says, I don't want, so he says, why do I have to care, right? Nobody else does. And this is, why is this on me? And she says, because it's, you have the means. If I had your money, it would be on me. And then, you know, she says, I don't want one person to do it. I want a better system. But for a better system to happen, the people with the most power have to make it happen. And then he looks at her and he says, you have all the power here. And she thinks to herself, how could he not understand that his money meant he would always have the power in their relationship? Or was she the one who was misunderstanding? So, like, obviously, this is a romance novel. So, she does have, like, you know, there's the fantasy is all. I think this is the other reason why I'm fascinated by this book, because, like, that is so real, that conversation. But the fantasy is still, like, knitted in here, right?
Yeah, right. Of course.
Where he's like, you have the power because I'm falling in love with you is the subtext. And she's like, that's bullshit, but maybe it's not, right? Which it is bullshit. Like, he has the checkbook. He has the power.
The ending, that quote, it was flowers from the storm. Sorry. Like, I was like, who is that language of, like, if only, you know, basically, you know, woman up. If you really want to help people, take his money and help people. But, like, yeah, it's like more, it's different to be told you could do it. And this book is like, no, this is watch me do it. Right. Watch me do this.
Yeah.
No, and I do. And I loved it. I mean, that to me was, it was such a clear arc for her beyond just like, oh, I figured out I could make him give away money. Like, it was really fascinating because what happens is her sister gets involved.
Well, before the sister gets involved, there's a great sick bed scene. So, like, she gets sick and he's like, oh, shit, I gotta.
She's not at work. And he calls for her. He, like, kind of can't take it. We're not supposed to do it at work. But
are you sick? Are you sick? Are you sick? And she's like, I have a cold. Relax. Yeah.
And they're like, she's not here today, sir. And he's like, what? And he freaks out. And of course, I loved that. It was
amazing.
And then
he brings her food again.
Yeah. And, like, you know, a Russian poultice. And, you know, and she's like, I don't, what are you doing to me? What is this? Right? Like, what is your cultural medicine you're making me take right now?
And he's like, do you have fluids? And she's like, well, I'm lucky enough to have indoor plumbing. So, yes, I'm fine. Like, she's really fine. But he, like,
no, it's great. I mean,
so if you're a sucker for that, which I know many of you are.
Well, it's really also fun. A really great scene because we see him caring for her, which he's already flagged as being important, but he's caring for her outside of sex at this moment, right?
Yeah, no sex, no money.
These are the scenes where it's just them. I care about you. And I think that then that's what also makes this convincing, like, as an HEA. Like, that scene needed to happen,
mm-hmm.
right, in order to show us that there's more to what they are experiencing with each other and there's more to who they are together than just the sex or just the money or the dominance or whatever. And so, you know, that caring for her becomes a really important part of, you know, the journey of their relationship at that moment.
Yes. I mean, it also serves a little bit of a moment for the alpha submissive girlies, because he gets to be alpha here, right? Like, there's, you know, he's
bots are around.
He's like, let me put this mustard compress on you. I bought it from a Ukrainian lady. Like,
it's for sure it's going great. To work.
Listen, so anyway, so then the sister gets involved. And this is interesting because it's like two worlds coming together, right?
Well, and I think the thing about the sister that we have not mentioned is that she is a mother who has lost custody of her own children.
Right.
And this is incredibly painful for Kate because they were children whose parents never lost custody, but who, like I said earlier, had essentially functionally abandoned them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's like she cannot help but judge her sister And it's like this real case study in like who got out of that situation and how, right? And Kate sort of feels like I did everything I could to get out and they weren't willing. My sister wasn't willing to. And I think her sister feels a little like Kate got out by leaving me behind. And so there is a sense or a feeling of like this is Angela. I forgot. Is that? No. Angel. Right.
Angel.
You owe me somehow. Right. Like you and there's a great line where it's kind of like Kate thought, like, I couldn't tell her that, you know, $75,000 a year or whatever in Chicago is nothing. Mm-hmm. Right. Like they just look at that number and think, how can you not have money? And Kate's like, well, because I understand what it is like for me to live in the city or, you know, on this salary on my own. And and so her sister comes and like fucks up her place. Yeah. Right. And Kate's just like, I'm calling the cops and having her arrested. And like you and, you know, she's like, I'm not doing this. Like, I'm just not engaging with you. And it's really, I thought, again, like a really effective and painful moment where you see that Kate has made a lot of hard decisions and just like her boundaries are like rock solid. And she knows, like, I cannot engage with this at all or I will get sucked back under.
Yeah.
But it's painful.
It's painful, and it's especially – and I think it continues to sort of eat away at the relationship with – between her and Mikhail, right? Like where they're – so, you know, now they've opened this door to money being on the table for their, like, kink. And I think, like, it starts to feel – it starts to get weird because he's like – there are no boundaries anymore. Like there's no, yes, he's paying her $5,000 a week. And yes, she's doming him because like he's like ostensibly like he's got this itch that needs to be scratched. Right. But then he's like bringing her mustard poultices and like taking her Richard Gere shopping. And the reality is like, it's complicated. It's complicated. Like, and worse, you guys, she's falling for him.
Right.
And with this, like, again, this sort of very real sense of guilt, like, I got out, my sister, like, it's not overt. It's not, she's pissed about her sister, but she's also, like, keenly aware of circumstance, right? There, but for the grace of God, so to speak, right? So, she is falling for him. And
I think what's interesting is he is falling for her, but what that means to him is I want her with me all the time. How can I arrange this so that I can give her a salary and a title and pay taxes
preferential and all the treatment.
on the up and up. And essentially it's again the Pretty Woman ending, right? Where he's like, you know, I'll get you a real nice apartment.
Yeah. I'm gonna make you my employee, but like basically you're going to have to be with me all the time.
Yeah, right. That's what I want.
And she's like, I don't want that. Like, I don't want that. Like, I want to be. And then there's this like really powerful conversation between them that, again, like we've seen a million times in romance, but like in this book felt it hits differently where he's like, I cannot love.
Yeah, right. Of course.
I don't know what love is.
I don't know what that is.
Like it's, but what I know is that I want you with me all the time. And she's like, if you can't, and then he's like, she's like, no, like if you can't love me, this isn't going to work. Cause I have fallen in love with you. Like I love you. And he's like, I wish I could say that, but I can't, but I still want you around me all the time and we could still fuck. And like, I'll give you everything you want. Like I'll make you happy. I'll do everything I can, but I don't know what love is.
Yeah.
And she's like, no. And then she walks out and he is like, and then they like come back together, you know, whatever, a day later. And he's right. like, marry me. And she's like, what? And he's
what's
like,
happening? Right.
No prenup. Like, marry me. You're all I care about having. Like, you are the
you're
thing.
All I want.
You're the item that I want now. I want to be with you all the time. Marry me. And she's like, but you cannot love me. And he's like, I cannot love you.
Yeah.
And then she's like, then I quit all of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she leaves because she's brokenhearted.
Sure.
And that dumb man feels so many feelings.
So many feelings. I love it.
And it's really terrific work on all sides. Because then the sister, he finds the sister.
Right. And it's basically like, help me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know what to do.
Oh, wait, we didn't talk about the Le Creuset pot, but so there's like, I mean, whatever, it doesn't matter. So they find this, he goes and he finds his sister at like a club, and the sister has like gotten clean, like is trying, like has like, there's sort of like some sequel bait possibly here. Like there's like a man she's interested in. So like there's, you know, whatever. And he basically like verbally vomits at the sister, and the sister's Herb. Like, you're an idiot.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Everything you're describing is in fact love.
Yes.
Like,
I love it when they're like, that's what? Love. That feeling you just described is love. I don't know what to do about you.
But it's always numb. Like a third party who says it.
Oh yeah, I love it. One of my favorite parts, one of the reasons I love Lead by Kylie Scott at the end is that it is actually between the two of them, where she's like, that's love. You love me, you stupid dummy.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, but then it's not easy for him, right? Because she also, the sister was kind of like, all right, that's love. You got to figure this out.
Yeah, I'm not getting involved. And I mean, could get away with doing that as a character because she's been so estranged for so long. Like,
right.
She's like, I will help you to the point where.
Yeah.
And then she calls the sister and she's like, some Russian guy came here asking about you, you know? And Kate is like, what? What'd he say about me?
I love that. Listen, I'm garbage.
I know. I think part of the reason why I like this book so much is because it plays both sides of the court in a lot of ways.
It gives you everything you want.
It's not. It is a great romance novel that sort of serves up all the basic shit, but then also is doing a completely different thing, operating on a second level.
Other stuff, yeah.
Yeah. And then she's like home in her house and her friends are like over, like Bridget Jones style, like we've come for dinner. And then one of them is like, hey, did you hear?
Yeah, like. Turn on that, CNN or whatever, right?
Mikhail has like divested half the company to the employees.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, only a 100 millionaire now. I mean, which I appreciate because it's like, I mean, obviously this man is never going to not have money, but like he's trying.
And this is like a really good case study in like Mackenzie Scott. No, is that her name? Jeff Bezos' wife.
Yeah, Mackenzie Bezos. Yeah. Well, I don't know what her maiden name is.
Yeah. But she is, of course, like a billionaire too.
Yeah, just she's like had all the that Amazon money, richest right? person in the world.
And she gives away money like there's no fucking just, tomorrow. Like,
yeah,
like in the way that makes other people look really bad, honestly, where she's just literally like, okay, fucking millions of dollars just flowing out of my bank account. And it literally makes no difference because when you have that much money,
it's replenishing itself.
Yes. You know. And it's really fascinating.
But he's because, like, yeah. Put the company in the hand. He's stepped down from the board. He's put the company in the hands of employees. The employees now have seats on all the board. Like the other board members are furious about it. Like,
sue or whatever.
Listen. You know? If you're going to have a happily ever after for billionaires, like, and there's, you know, there's no way to make a billionaire poor. There just isn't. And so I think she really threads that needle well. Like, it feels like a happily ever after. The heroine sort of acknowledges that this is like a big thing. And then there, you know, she's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Look what he did.
Because I think it's a great ending in that it follows the arc of the characters, right? Like, it's the logical ending, but sometimes people don't do the logical thing or they're building to something, but then they kind of balk and can't follow through. And, you know, and in this case, it really has to be a huge fucking gesture. And him essentially saying, like, yeah, like my workers, right? I mean, it's very, right? Mm-hmm. My workers, I mean, this like own the means of production now because I've shared it with them. Mm-hmm. They are the ones who make the wealth of my company. So, yeah, it's great. It's great.
Yeah.
I loved it.
And then she goes to his house and he's like all alone and sad. And then he's like, oh my God, let her in.
Yeah.
And then they bang.
Sure. So do you want to talk about the alpha submissive part, like the sexy stuff?
Yeah. So we will never do an alpha submissive interstitial. So I figured now is the chance for us to do that. For me personally to do that. Jen, you just sit quiet.
I mean, are we going to talk about this book or no? We're done.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about so what about the appeal?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to give you a platform.
Well,
to, like, talk about,
the, well, yeah. No, I had a question for you about submissiveness.
Oh, yeah,
because I appreciate that it's like not a kink, like a sexual thing. Like you don't find it sexy, but like, were you intrigued by the money being on the table, or was that also boring?
That just felt separate to me. I guess. I feel like if not, if their sex life was not like femdom or submissive or whatever you want to call it, and she still was like, you need to give your money away to be with me, I would have found that.
That would have been fine.
Yeah. And I think part of the reason is really interesting. I should maybe mention something that happened on the Discord where someone asked me this question. And I like kind of found this because I was like, what did I say? Because someone was like, you know, Jen, essentially, you know, like Sarah said a lot of times that she really likes the alpha submissive. And then they were kind of like, and or femdom. And I've always been curious to hear more about like why you don't like it. And I sort of was like, okay, let me like think through what I want to say. And here's what I think I said. I have a deep-seated belief that character tropes and kink tropes don't actually have anything to do with each other. Right? So an alpha is an alpha, which is about like characterization, but like being submissive or liking whatever you like in bed, it's just like not has nothing to do with that, right? Like you could have a golf pro submissive or a garbage man submissive or a right, like those don't. I'm not interested in that somehow. Oh, like right, like does that make sense? I was trying to
it
like
it does, but yeah, I'm not sure I agree, but yeah. Yeah.
So, but I think I feel like there's part of me that's like, if we really say like kink is kink, right? Like what you like in bed has nothing to do with how you are in the world. Now, you're saying, but I am particularly interested in this interaction because it does seem so diametrically different or whatever, right? So you're saying I find a way that that's interesting?
Yeah. For me, that. The dichotomy of it is.
Yes, right. But like you see my point that like.
Yeah, oh, I do. When I say I don't think I agree, I mean like personally, like Sarah, I'm not sure I agree.
Yeah, yeah. No. And I'm saying like I could see why you would think that's really interesting because what if the things you like, I mean, like if someone's like, I don't know, I'm afraid of flying, but I really get off on like hiking up to the tops of mountains and banging. Like I'd be like, well, that's interesting to me. Like seems out of, you know what? But
yeah, the two things are counterintuitive.
Right. Okay. So that is, so I think that's kind of what I was trying to explain, like why every time you're like, I'm really interested and I'm like, I'm not, right? Like they're just, and I think the reason why is because I like alphas. I'm interested in that as a character trope, but I am not, and it was reading this book that made me realize how I'm not, I don't think submission is sexy.
Yeah.
I think and that's true for everybody. So, I was like, oh, this helps me explain a lot about why I don't really like BDSM or like I'm just and people are like, I like the power exchange. And I'm like,
so, OK, here's my thing. I'm not sure it works for me because I like the power exchange.
That's yeah, interesting I believe that. Too.
Like there are lots of interesting things here, right? Like interrogation of kink is really fascinating for me on a like purely like intellectual level, right?
Yes. Agree.
Because I do think like the things that get you off, like sometimes it's like they're just hardwired from like that time you read a Sandra Brown novel when you were 10, right? And then I think sometimes they are about like your own fucked up, you know, internal existence, right? So but I think that for me, in the romance, like within the context of a romance novel, I mean, I sort of explain like on a high level, like the patriarchy piece is really for me, like, it feels like revenge fantasy in a lot of ways, right? Like, break him, and I want to see him broken in every possible way, right? So, but, like, setting that aside, I'm also very fascinated in my own writing and in other people's writing about the burden of power. And I appreciate there are a lot of people who don't care about that. Like, fuck powerful people, like, and their, like, feelings, right? And that's a very reasonable way of thinking. But for me, I'm really fascinated about, like, how power holds weight for the people who own that power, right? Like, how they are changed by power, how they learn to manipulate, how they exist in power, and then ultimately through romance, how they become better people while still holding, in many ways, like, a power that is, like, racist, classist, like
sure,
holds all of these isms inside it, and, like, could be ruining in a lot of ways, right?
Could be ruinous, right? Yeah.
Right. So I think for me, because that is, like, what I'm most interested in when I think about, and in my case, like, heroes in particular, like, when I write a hero, I think a lot about, like, what burdens them. And I don't write heroes who don't have power. So for me, like, there is a really interesting, when it comes to kink, and, like, there is, and you can write a hero who, like, has, there finds freedom from that burden in sex. Like, I think there's a really interesting conversation to be had on the page with that.
Yeah.
So I guess, which is why when I feel, I don't think every book needs to do this. I think very few writers actually do think about, like, are interested in this. But I, not that they should be, like, it's just, we're all interested in different things.
Sure.
But when you say, like, oh, for you, character and kink are separate, I think that can be true. But I think this particular kink seems to be very integral to, like, that alpha, like, if you have an alpha who is also a submissive in bed, it feels like there should be a reason.
Well, and I guess that's where I feel a little, yeah, and, like, fair, and I think I, and maybe this is, like, the 50 Shades Wars beat it out of
but
me.
But, like, I'm also not interested in submissive. Like, I don't care about submissive heroines, largely. I mean, like, in male, in MF, like, it's not, like, I actually, I can be very turned off by it in MF because I feel like, well, great, she's submissive here just like she is everywhere else. Like, and so for me, like, there is, like, a, the inversion of it is interesting to me.
Sure. And that, I think, makes sense, right? Like, I hear what you're saying. And I found myself thinking, like, I wonder if it was, like, the 50 Shades Wars that beat this out of me, right? Like,
well,
the idea that like,
shit,
right, like, the bad BDSM takes are that, like, you know, the things that turn you on or off are, like, can be, like, somehow directly correlated back to some, like, sort of trauma or whatever. And I'm always like, man, I don't like how that feels to, like, sort of diagnose or like kind of make it. So I think that's why for me, I'm like, I'm pretty okay with this being separate. And then just really, like, sort of saying, like, honestly, like I said, I didn't find the sex in this book sexy because I don't think submission is sexy.
Yeah. There was one
scene in this book where I was like, oh, that's kind of hot. And it was, she's wearing her new shoes and she makes a joke about how they're good for, like, stepping on throats.
Mm.
And he's like, one throat. And she, like, yanks him by his tie and is like, are you questioning my integrity? And I was like, oh, that was kind of hot. She grabbed him by his tie. But
that
didn't feel like kink. It felt like every time I wanted to fucking punch a man for being like, you know what I mean? But yeah, I just was, so I was, I, and so in a weird way, because I tend to steer clear of, like, a lot of, like, really big power exchange books.
Yeah.
I don't think I realized that about me. I think I was willing to say, like, I think whipping is too much for me.
Or yep.
I think being on the cross thing in the club is too much for me.
Yep.
Or, right? And then there were ways where I was like, oh, this is hot. But because there's, like, some other thing I think is hot that's, like, kind of overriding it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, right, I was like, oh, but it's hot when there's other people watching. But that's because I think voyeurism's kind of hot. But then with this book, I was like, oh, nothing about this is hot for me. Like him kneeling and doing all, and her, no, like,
that's fine.
You know, and I was like, oh, okay. So yeah, in a weird way, I was really glad I read it because I thought submissive heroines were not hot. And I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
It's not for me.
Well, it's interesting, right?
Because NFJ.
And that's allowed. And sure. So, but I think you brought up 50 Shades, and I just want to point to, and I think we talked about that when we read 50 Shades, I think we talked about this scene because for me, the most interesting sex moment in 50 Shades is the moment where, and it's not a sex moment, but the most interesting power moment in 50 Shades is when, like, she's basically like, they have like an argument, and I think it's in the first book, but I can't honestly remember. Yeah. They have an argument, and it's the end of a chapter, and he doesn't know what to do. Like, Christian can't like get out of his head and like figure out how to fix the problem.
Yeah.
And so he goes sub, like he kneels.
Yeah.
And she, and like it happens, and like I came online at that point in the book. I was like, oh, something great, something interesting is about to happen that, like, I've never seen before. Or rather, something that, like, they are going to have to negotiate. And instead, she, like, bursts into tears and gets down on her knees and, like, basically begs him to stand up and, like, fuck her. I don't know. But, like, it's all wrong there intellectually for me because it feels like that's the moment where Christian Grey, like, powerful billionaire, like, who is controlled in every way, like, cannot deal with, like, being out of control. And so he, like, immediately, you know, goes to his knees. And I think that is interesting to me. But I don't think in that book, like, it was treated as character.
Right. I think it was treated as character and that he had been someone submissive.
It was treated as, like, now you see, like, broken Christian.
Yes.
Exactly. Which is not what I want.
Right. Right. And that's why, like, it's like there's a scene where
if anybody is getting broken in these books, I want them to be broken by the heroine in the moment.
Fair. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so in that sense. And I guess I would also say, look, regardless of whether or not it, like, I thought it was hot or whatever, I think it is really masterful. Like, if you've ever heard us say, like, sex scenes should do work or you should see character development in the sex scenes and you're like, I don't know what they mean, you should read this book because the way that it, the journey, the, like, the sexual journey, like, the, their positions to each other or what they'll do or not do or who's in control or not in control or where they physically are, like, in a, you know, like, there's a point where she's like, we basically had only fucked on his desks and then they were in his room and, you know, like, sort of the evolution of, I mean, and he's still submissive, like, that doesn't change. But, like, there's all these other ways in which we understand that they are becoming emotionally more intimate as the sex changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, so it's like if you've ever been a person who's heard us say that and you're like, I don't quite get what they mean by that.
Mm.
This is a great book for you to read because it's so carefully done.
Right. The character work in the sex scenes is very good.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so that's all I wanted to say. Do you want to talk about your recommendations?
So I'm going to just make a list for everybody. And I'm not going to talk very much about all of them. But, like, I think this is – if you think this might be your kink or you know this is your kink, like, these books may or may not hit for you. They are all books that have hit for me. And I've probably talked about most of these before. So I talked about Kat Giraldo's Wild Pitch recently. That's a baseball romance. She is the first, like, woman in the major leagues. And she's a rookie and he is, like, the team captain. So, again, that's sort of, like, very a lot of power in real life. And then he is a
– And he's older.
In all of these, he is the submissive. So he is older. In Katie Porter's Hold'em, this is the Vegas Top Gun series, which I'm sure we've talked about before many seasons ago, I think. But all of these are, like, hotshot, like, Navy pilots. And in this one, he's, like, a hotshot Navy pilot. It's a second chance between them. And she is like a real dom. So it's, and it's super sexy. This whole series is interesting because every book
is like a explores a different kink.
So like, it's fun if you're just like thinking about kink in general. And I actually think Katie Porter is a great, like they were a great team. Nicola Davidson has a short historical novella called The Devil's Submission. He is a duke, and he thinks he's like unable to like be a good husband because of his proclivities. And she's like, oh, hang on. She's like this like lovely virgin ingenue who's like, oh, wait a second. What do you want me to do? And she's like, I'm into it. Along the same vein, but darker, is Scarlett Peckham's The Duke I Tempted. This does get into like whipping and like actual pain play, so be aware of that. Actually, check your content warnings for all of these, obviously. Yeah. In Audra North's Giving It Up, he's the head of like a cop, like a SWAT team.
Hmm.
And like has to be in like ultimate control in his job all the time. This is an interesting one because she has no knowledge. They like meet at a wedding. She's a wedding photographer. She has no knowledge of being a dom. Like it's never even occurred to her. And like when it becomes clear that like that's what he wants from her, she like goes off to like learn about it, which I think is a cool, you know, twist on it. Alexis Hall's For Real, Jen just talked about, but like that is another one where the like character in the position of power in the world is who is older and wealthy and has a, you know, very high powered job is the submissive. And the other hero in that book is like extremely young, extreme, and just like kind of knows that he's a dominant. So that's cool. Joey Hill's Natural Law is like a lot of ropes are going on there. My favorite, Tessa Bailey, I think you could imagine is like you could sort of read it as an alpha submissive, and that's Asking for Trouble. He's again a police officer. She does sort of like gently dom him in bed, and he's into it. So that's like a kind of on a spectrum of alpha submissive. That's probably on the like looser end, but you would probably enjoy it. And then I'm just going to, I don't ever talk about my books, but I do just want to name check the Duke one. No Good Duke Goes Unpunished.
I was like, the Duke one. Duke
They're
one.
All Duke ones.
I was like, there's a lot of Dukes, Sarah.
No Good Duke Goes Unpunished. And Brazen and the Beast are both, I think you could find cause
something for you there. Yeah,
to read those as alpha submissive books. Yeah. So there it is. A big list.
A big
list.
For
everyone.
A big list. That's great.
And if you listen, I will say multiple people have recommended preferential treatment to me over the years since it came out. So if you do have an alpha submissive book that you really love, and I did not just name it, please hit me up. I would like to read it.
It was a great book. It was a great book. Like, I mean, I think it's like just goes to show you that just because like there might heavily feature something you think you don't like, it like a great book is a great book.
Yeah. I mean, this book is just doing more than kink. So I can definitely see how, like, if this is not your thing, most of the books that I just named would not work for you. But I would also say, you know, there are some that have where it's like embedded in the work of the book. Like the book is more than just like how these two have sex.
I've DNF'd many of these books.
yeah. But not Brazen and the Beast.
Not all of them. Nope. Not Brazen and the Beast. I mean, you know, I think it depends. Like, I loved For Real by Alexis Hall. But, I mean, it's a terrific book. I was just, like, really interested in it. And you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, so a lot of these books, of course, are beautiful and well-written. And it's just, like, which one is going to be for
and
you.
And I should say, all of the books I just named, some of them are erotica. And when you get into erotic romance, the kink is going to be much firmer, much, like, more intense than in some of the others.
Right.
So, that is that for the day. This is Fate of Mates, everyone. I'm Sarah McLean. I'm here with my friend Jen Prokop. You can find us every Wednesday at fateofmates.net or in your favorite podcasting app. Please like and follow so that you get us every week. You can also find us on Twitter at Fate of Mates, on Instagram at Fate of Mates Pod. If you want to just talk to people all the time about romance novels and why, you know, submission works or does not work for you, you can do that on our Discord, which you get access to when you join our Patreon at fateofmates.net/Patreon. We are very excited to have you every week. Thanks so much to Heather for a great book.
Yeah, let's get that sister teed up. My goodness. All right.